The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Christian Sager.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And today we bring you yet another listener mail episode. In this case, we've been combing through and what seems like an infinite library of listener mail.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. Going back to your guys' Library of Babel episode.
Yes, our inbox contains not only all listener feedback, but all possible listener feedback from the positive to the negative, from the sensical to the nonsensical.
Sometimes it does feel like that. We get a ton of listener mail, but I must say that we also, it's basically Crimson Hexagon stuff.
Yeah.
In that it's almost all really good stuff, I would say. We hear a lot of great feedback from y'all out there. And so we have to say, as always, we get tons of mail. If what you sent us was not included, please don't take that as a slight. We love reading, whatever you get to send us. And we like to respond when we get time, but we often don't. But, we're going to pick a few today. We won't be able to go through the whole barrel, but maybe we'll be able to, not scrape the bottom of the barrel, but scrape some of the sides of the barrel near the top.
Luckily, we have, a fourth entity here to do any scraping that's necessary.
Oh,
and that's,
yeah,
of course, our good friend Carney, the mailbot.
Ah, yeah. Hey, Carney, what's going on?
I've noticed that Carney has taken on what seems to be a somewhat melancholy, suicidal aspect since we entered this vast library of all possible email.
Well, it's a lot to sort out, even with his high processing speeds.
Even Carney only has so much RAM.
RAM. Oh, why is it funny to talk about RAM now? RAM used to be a thing you'd talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Not anymore. All right. Well, on that note, let's jump into it. Let's call Carney over. Carney, will you bring us our first bit of listener mail?
Hey, let's see. Okay, this first one is in response to the episode that Robert and I did about flying fish, jumping fish, flying fish, breaching sharks, leaping mullets, all the fish that do the equivalent of us jumping into outer space momentarily. So this first one is from Mona, and she, if you remember from that episode, Robert and I, we talked about a couple of species of Asian carp that are known for occupying, North American river waters, jumping out of the water when your motorboat goes by, and in some rare cases, breaking your face.
Yes, or worse, yes.
Yeah, and so as we discussed, there's this Chinese cultural concept of the carp that leaps over the dragon gate, right? Literally literally a mythical concept that if a river carp can leap over a certain waterfall, it's going to transform into a dragon.
So it's a Magikarp turning into Gyarados.
This is exactly what the email is about.
Is it?
I had no idea about this, but
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, Mona writes to us to say, "Hello, Robert and Joe. I just finished listening to the Leaping Mullets, Flying Fish, Breaching Sharks episode of the podcast. I just wanted to give you a fun fact about the Chinese mythology of the leaping carp turning into a dragon. If either of you have played or know of Pokemon, the video game, or the popular TV show," I think that's funny. She specifies popular.
It's still popular after all these years.
Is it?
Yeah, I think
people still watch the Pokemon cartoon?
Oh, yeah. My wife used to work at Cartoon Network, and it's a huge hit over there.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. They constantly are putting out new seasons of it.
Really? I had no idea. They're making more Pokemon.
It's been around since I was in my 20s, so it's got to be like, what? They've been working on it for probably like almost 20 years,
I think 19? That's the thing. It really emerged after I was out of the main demographic.
Yeah.
So.
I was just immature enough to play the video game and watch the cartoon a little bit in my 20s. So I know way more than a 39-year-old man should about Pokemon.
Okay, well, I didn't know this. But anyway, Mona continues, if we know about Pokemon, you'd be aware of a Pokemon called Magikarp. It has always confused my friends and I how this pretty useless fish, I guess that means not a good fighter.
Yeah, so in the game, Magikarp is like the worst possible Pokemon. It can barely do anything. But if you level it up.
Oh, okay. She says, yeah, it ends up evolving into a completely overpowered dragon type Pokemon.
Yeah. Huh.
Gyarados?
Gyarados. That's
Gyarados.
What it said, yeah.
This Pokemon is actually inspired by the said myth that you mentioned in your podcast, which gives this evolution a lot more sense. I know. Mind blown. And then she says, thanks for making quality episodes, regardless of how weird they get sometimes. Love each and every one. My favorites being the X-Files episodes and the mystery of the myth-fleshed fossil. Looking forward to more. Well, thank you so much, That's Mona. Cool. That is very kind of you to say. And we also got emails from a couple other listeners on the same topic. Jeffrey wrote in to let us know about
same thing about Magikarp and Gyarados.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Oh, man. I wish I'd known. Gyarados was like one of my favorites. Like when I would play the game, I would always get a Magikarp and like keep him in reserve, level him up slowly. And then once you get Gyarados, it's awesome.
Wait a minute. You said you played the game a little in your 20s. This sounds like you played a lot.
Yeah. I played a lot. I had a Game Boy and would just play, what is it, Pokemon Gold, I think was what it was. And then my roommates and I got Pokemon Coliseum, which is the one where you can plug your Game Boy into your Nintendo 64 and fight your Pokemon against one another on the TV.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was great.
That sounds brutal. Okay, looks like Carnie is...
As my father-in-law says, no adult man spends time catching Pokemon.
Clearly a false statement.
I have to turn in my adult man card.
So, as I mentioned, Carney is holding something out here. What is it?
Oh, he's got one that is about cyborgs and transhumanism, which is something that Robert and I have been weaving in and out of over the last, 3 months. We've done various episodes that tie into this theme.
Yeah, yeah.
And this actually came to us in May. I wish we'd read it earlier. And he originally, this isn't his whole letter, but he originally wanted to ask us about doing an episode on GMOs based on the organic food episode that we did. But he tied into the cyborgs episode that we did, which is the first of, I want to say like 3 or 4 episodes where we talked about sort of the future of changing the human body. And he says, in your cyborgs episode, you touch on the ethical quandaries of performing surgical enhancements before a child is born. I thought you might find it interesting to know that, in a way, this does already happen. My son has spina bifida, a birth defect wherein the spinal column fails to close properly. It leads to permanent paralysis and often brain damage. He actually underwent surgery before he was born to repair the defect and minimize the impact. He still lost some nerves, but probably saved enough nerves above the knees that he'll be able to walk with braces. To make it weirder, another benefit of the surgery is reversal of associated hindbrain herniation, which if left unchecked leads to hydrocephalus and malformation of the corpus callosum. A downside in my son's case is that he was born extremely premature, 26 weeks, 2 pounds, a significant risk to the surgery, and about 10% are born early. This caused a stage 4 interventricular hemorrhage, wiping out most of the left side of his brain. Young brains can recover from this to some extent, but science does not yet understand how exactly it does this. A good lead is the subject of neuroplasticity and neural reuse. See the book After Phrenology for a rather technical intro. So my point is, by saving his ability to walk, we also repaired one part of his brain and damaged another. So in at least two ways, fundamentally changed the architecture of his brain and the type of person he will become. The surgery was highly experimental just a few years ago, but is now considered routine, albeit rare. I think he was number 150 to get it since the experimental study ended. In all the discussion of ethics surrounding the surgery, which is what Robert and I talked about in the show, mainly in regards to cyborgs, and babies, and there's many conversations about the ethics, the primary concern has always been ensuring that the benefits outweigh the many risks involved with opening up a womb, pulling the kid out, putting him back in again, and closing up mom. Jeez, that sounds horrifying to me. Like, not being a parent. That sounds absolutely terrifying to me. The question of whether it should be done at all versus letting nature take its course never really crossed my mind, and to my admittedly limited knowledge did not seem prevalent in the medical community. This may change as laparoscopic versions are perfected, minimizing risks, and surgery moves from mere repair to potential upgrades. So that's from Keegan. He wanted to weigh in on that. And he actually, you know, we talked a little bit more over email. There's a lot here, actually. I'm not going to read a whole lot more, but we had a nice conversation with him, and he's continuing conversation with us about this. But it's just really interesting to hear about this real world example where you and I, based on, oh, I can't remember off the top of my head the name of the theorist on cyborgs who came up with that idea. But basically, they were various scenarios in which would it or would it not be ethical,
right,
to transform someone into a cyborg? And what does their identity become afterwards? And one of them was, what if you change a child before it's born? So this was a nice real-world example coming back to that. And with lots of science in it, I was unaware of any of that.
Yeah, that's fascinating that people think of this as a purely future concern, right? Like, they don't think about...
Right, they don't realize that it's happening in present day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I genuinely... We did that whole episode. We've been talking about transhumanism, biohacking, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I did not realize that you can, as he puts it, take a baby out of its mother, change it physically, and then put it back in. That's... No pun intended for the show. Mind blowing.
Yeah.
All right. It looks like we have another bit of listener mail here. This one comes from listener Ra. Ra writes in and says, "Hey guys, I thought this was very topical. I enjoyed your recent show on great flood myths. You may be interested to know that the latest edition of Science, August 5th, 2016, contains an article with evidence supporting a Chinese great flood myth."
Oh, yeah.
He lists the title of it. And he says the team used a range of compelling measurements of sediment compositions and radiocarbon dating to argue that it was very plausible there was one of the greatest freshwater floods of the Holocene in the Yellow River, coinciding with the transition of the civilization in the region from the Neolithic to the Bronze Age. In case you're interested enough, I've attached a PDF copy of the paper. Enjoy. Thanks for the show. So as luck would have it, we started receiving a number of different comments about this because it is very exciting. We had just done this episode on great flood myths, and then there was this really cool study that came out of China. And, the main, professor on this was, Nanjing Normal University geology professor, Wu Qinglong. And I actually wrote some copy and did a video about it for How Stuff Works Now, which I'll include a link to on the landing page for this episode. But, as Rob points out, it's really fascinating because it's actual supporting evidence for essentially what would have been, an earthquake oriented, damming of the river. Like there's a collapse of rock. Closes off a portion of the Yellow River, and then floodwaters build up behind it until they reach a breaking point and then crash through with, I believe, like 500 times the normal flow strength, resulting in this this flood that is actually very important. I believe we discussed a little bit about it in Chinese mythology because it has to do with the rise of Yu the Great, who's the first emperor of the Xia Dynasty, which is China's first dynasty. Dynasty, predating the second millennium BC Shang Dynasty. So it's a fascinating topic because you see mythology, you see geology, and history all sort of coming together in this one.
Yeah, yeah, which is what we saw with a lot of that flood stuff. And I think the geologists that we spoke about their work on in that episode, they were probably fascinated by this paper coming out. Hey, I got to ask a tangential question, not related to floods, but related to Chinese myth. Have you seen the trailer for this new movie, The Great Wall?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, when I first saw it, I thought, well, that looks like a bit, I tended to think about it in terms of like the business side. Like clearly this is like an international production. They're going for a large Chinese audience as well as a US audience by having Matt Damon in it. But I didn't really think much about it beyond that because I'm like, I can't see what the monster looks like. Right. I'll decide whether I'm interested or not when I see a picture of the monster.
Yeah.
But then I ended up running across the commentary from actress Constance Wu.
Is,
of course, most famous, I think, to our listeners for being on the sitcom Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah.
And, she had a lot of, you know, very stark criticisms.
I would imagine, yeah.
Of this particular, story.
So for our listeners, if you don't know, and Joe, you haven't seen the trailer yet, it seems, from the trailer, it looks like it is a story about why the Great Wall was built with a fantasy angle to it, that the secret history of the Great Wall is that there were like monsters or dragons or something like that.
Oh, that sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, on the surface, that sounds great.
But Matt Damon is the hero. Oh. Matt Damon and the guy who plays one of the Dorne guys on Game of Thrones are like these like monster killers that they bring in to help them. So it's like an all Chinese cast except those two guys who ostensibly save the day, I guess.
That sounds pretty Hollywood.
It's a little whitewashy and problematic, but I can absolutely see from a business perspective why it's made the way it is.
Well, it's like Netflix Marco Polo, which I've watched and enjoyed, but it's like you have this this Western figure at the heart of the drama to anchor it in you know, Western expectations, and then that at times that feels really
icky.
Dishonest and icky.
Yeah. I don't know. When I see stuff like that, it immediately made me think of our episode on flood myth and how like we're building mythology today still with movies like this, right? But they're just not, instead of explaining the flood, they're sort of quasi explaining the history of the Great Wall in a fake fantasy way. You know, I mean, that's kind of fun. Like, I don't mind.
Yeah,
like,
no. That like aspect of
sci-fi revisionist history, but in such a way as this, it seems weird.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of going back and looking at old myths and reinterpreting them in light of what we know today, we got a great, just awesome email from our listener, Katie, about responding to both the flood episode and Robert and I, our episode on geomythology and monsters.
Yeah, we've been hitting the mythology hard. We've had a couple core themes over the last few months. Mythology, biohacking, fish.
Yeah, we have done a number of marine biology episodes. You know, we had Mara Hart come back on and talk about
it. I didn't think about that as a theme, but
yeah.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Okay, well, anyway, Katie writes, quote, "Love your show to pieces, especially the geomythology episode and the last episode about flood myths. When you guys were talking about the Old Norse flood myths, you were talking about the Ymir, who made all the world. As you guys say, very metal."
Yeah, Ymir's totally brutal. There's got to be some metal band out there named Ymir, like 20.
There has to be, yeah.
Anyway, Katie continues, "There is another mythological flood in Old Norse mythology that comes from the poem Völuspá."
Okay.
And she says, "Völuspá is a poem found in the Poetic Edda, wherein you get everything about Norse mythology. For some context, the Völvar were the female soothsayers, and the poem, which translates to the seeing of the seer, is meant to be a recitation of a Völva that she gives to an unnamed audience about the forthcoming Ragnarok, the twilight of the gods that
Didn't you just record an episode about that before I walked in the studio?
We just talked about
We did talk about Ragnarok. A little bit.
But anyway, she writes, "Among the many awesome epic verses are several at the end that describe the world falling into the sea." Now we can't read all of these. She's put a bunch in. They're really cool. I just want to read one. She says, quote, or she doesn't write this. She copies in the translation of the Edda. Yeah. "The sun turns black. Earth sinks in the sea. The hot stars down from heaven are whirled. Fierce grows the steam and the life-feeding flame till fire leaps high about heaven itself."
Nice. That sounds like some Manowar lyrics right there.
Oh, that is so much better than Manowar lyrics.
Have you guys seen the Manowar lyric generator?
It'd be more about brave kings with the hammer.
Yeah. It's awesome though. I love how that stuff plays out in present context and the mythology of it too.
Oh yeah. So anyway, Katie quotes more of the poem, but she goes on to say, "So a giant flood comes and destroys the earth in a very Noah's deluge type of way. Stars fall in this flood, like possible comets coming to Earth that was referenced in the episode, but the falling stars seem more to set the cataclysmic stage rather than recording any cause and effect occurrence with comets. Like the Utnapishtim and Noah's floods, the world emerges from the waters renewed and the gods come back to their halls and everything is beautiful and growing again. In this poem, however, the world ends again when a dragon flying up from the earth bringing forth darkness and destruction. You guys talked about dragons in the geomythology episode, and I forget if you had made eliminate any kind of speculations about dragons being connected with volcanoes or not. We only very briefly mentioned it, but we did.
Is this dragon she's referring to the Midgard serpent?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Which is part of the Ragnarok mythology.
Oh, yeah, the Jörgamander.
Yeah. But she says, the poetic Edda was transcribed in Iceland, where they definitely have volcanoes. That's certainly true.
Yep.
Skipping ahead just a little for time, she says, it's a pretty cool thing to think about, especially because this dragon brings darkness that destroys men, like clouds of ash that have been known to cover Iceland and northern Europe in ash clouds that block out the sun and cause the summer to be basically winter. On a sort of related geomythology note, in the Eddic poem, and I'm going to do my best here, Vathprudnismal, Odin is discussing how humans will survive a Fimbul winter, a cataclysmic winter that precedes Ragnarok. There were a series of extreme weather events in 536 or so that scholars believe were a historical Fimbul winter, where Europe basically didn't have a summer for a while and tons of people died. In Old Norse religion, there is a distinct difference between an earlier religious period where human and bog sacrifices were made, complete with distinct artifacts, and a later period where Odin, Thor, and co. are tramping around, killing giants and whatnot, and where the customs found in archaeology changed. People think this separation of practice came about because of social dislocation that happened because of this Fimbul winter around the 530s. Going back to the Voluspá, in earlier verses, they talk about the war between two sets of gods, with the group belonging to Odin being victorious. Some of the older gods, Freyr and Freya, of particular note, were taken as prisoners by Odin's groups and were assimilated into their pantheon. And then she gives some verses about it that are also cool. But for time, I'm going to skip on to the end of her message here. She says, quote, I love this theory because there is geological evidence that there were extreme weather patterns around the time the archaeological evidence shows a dramatic change in customs, which resonates in the mythological poems that trickle down. I'd be happy to go in more depth with the evidence, but this email is getting so long. Anyways, hope you guys enjoyed this, and I would highly recommend reading the Voluspá if you haven't. It's the poem where the stuff with Ymir comes from, along with the creation of the world and its destruction during Ragnarok, war, into the world by flood, rebirth, and destruction again by dragon. It's a pretty badass poem in all 66 stanzas. Should be read with lots of notes because there are tons of names for the names of gods. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you, Katie. That was an excellent email, and we really appreciate all of you educating us on the the horrors of the North.
I think it's also one thing that I got out of this that I liked is mentioning like multiple flood myths within the Norse tradition. And, you know, indeed, not only are there, you know, multiple flood myths from around the world in different cultures, within cultures you have multiple versions. Chinese culture alone has several different flood mythologies. And the one that we talked about in our episode and that I alluded to earlier is just like the most dominant of them.
Yeah. And I, you know, like after that episode and after hearing her reading her letter, I kind of wish I could take like a course on Norse mythology now. Like, I have like a passing familiarity with it, and I'm sure like I could do like a sort of self-guided deep dive into it on my own, but I'd really like somebody who understands it to kind of walk me through it.
Like you wake up on a ship.
That'd be great.
Pitched freezing ocean and your studies begin.
Oh, nice. Like a wilderness adventure / Norse mythology.
Yeah,
they blood the keel with your body. So this is how you learn.
Well, I got one here from Dr. Britt M. Starkovich, who is a professor at the University of Tübingen in Germany, I believe is how you pronounce it. Looks like she is an archaeozoologist professor. And she writes to us about our episode on Akademgorodok. She says, Dear Robert and Christian, I love your show. You really caught my attention in your Akademgorodok episode when you talked about the Russian domestic foxes. I teach archaeology at the University of Tübingen in Germany, and this is one of my all-time favorite topics. I specialize in the human use of animals in the past. what humans ate, what different species were domesticated, etc. I wanted to send you a link to some videos of foxes interacting with people. These are the specific foxes from Akademgorodok. She says, I find the, quote, aggressive or normal wild version a bit depressing, but the tame one is absolutely, absolutely adorable. They're cool videos. I recommend checking them out. They're hosted on Illinois University's website. She also says, you mentioned in your episode the different coloring patterns. I assume in your research you saw it's called piebald, which is also a coloring that shows up in a lot of other domesticated animals, border collies, Jersey cows, tuxedo cats, spotted pigs, and horses. The physical changes in these foxes, given that they were only being selected for behavioral traits, has totally caused us to rethink how we understand domestication and the modern diversity found among different breeds of animals. The last thing I wanted to mention is that for a time, this is awesome, there was a guy in the United States who would help arrange the import of one of these domesticated foxes to Europe or America if you had an extra $9,000 lying around.
Oh, wow.
So if you wanted to get an Akademgorodok fox, some shady dude.
That sounds illegal.
Would get you one. And she says his website hasn't been updated in a few years. She provides a link. She says, I'm not sure what the deal is. I'm a huge pet lover, but find it unethical to keep a non-domesticated animal as a pet. These little guys have enough genetic changes, though, that I dream of someday having one.
Well, see, that's all well and good until the fox gets too big and people flush it down the toilet, and then they become mutant sewer foxes.
Mutant sewer foxes.
Is it going to be Akademgorodok Fox, the movie? Is that what you're pitching here, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, Britt. That's really cool to learn. I mean, when we talked about it, I think I maybe casually said as an aside, I wonder if you can get one of these foxes.
I'm sorry, I'm still working on this. I think it's Teenage Mutant Akademgorodok Foxes.
Oh, nice. Hmm. Well, you know, and in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, there is a fox ninja.
They
hang out with.
Oh, yeah. Is it a lady fox?
Is it the
fox spirit?
Yes.
Mythology?
Yeah, okay. Totally.
What's
totally.
Her name?
I can't remember the name of it. It begins with an A. She's like a white fox with some markings and stuff, but she's occasionally an ally of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And yet again, showing how much I know about 80s cartoons.
Is there a fox Pokemon?
Yeah. There's multiple fox Pokemon. What? How do you not know this?
All right. Here's another one. This one comes to us from Sarah. She says, longtime listener, first time writer. I am a huge fan of the show and listen to every new episode as soon as I can. Your episode about incomplete art was incredibly fascinating, but of course you weren't able to include every unfinished project. But I wanted to point out a noticeable piece of unfinished art, the musical Rent.
Huh, I didn't know this.
Yeah. The writer of the musical, Jonathan Larson, died the night before the show was to start preview performances. According to the production staff, the show still had a lot of issues that needed to be worked out, but they were hesitant to move forward without the show's creator. They chose not to write anything else, only to rework the existing material. The show as it exists today is only a portion of the vision that Larson had for the show. We will never know how the show could have changed if Larson had been able to finish it, but what we're left with maintains Larson's legacy while being a highly popular and hugely influential production. This is important because it shows how a work can be finished without betraying the original ideas of its creator. I can't wait to see what else y'all have in store for your podcast, and hopefully y'all will never be included in the list of things that went on unfinished. Thanks for blowing my mind with every new episode.
Well, I will have to say, unfortunately, I think by nature we will have to be unfinished. How can we finish talking about all the things that will blow your mind?
Well, speak for yourself. I believe we can complete our work here.
Three of our minds into Carney, and we just continue talking for eternity.
Oh, that's true. Once we process the entire library of Babel, we will have exhausted
and
all possible
synchronicity. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious now if the version of Rent didn't have 524 hours, 600 minutes.
I don't think you got that right.
That's the only thing I know. I think the numbers are probably wrong. Yeah. That's all I know about Rent is that thing.
Yeah. I have to plead ignorance on the project, but it's interesting to learn about it, though.
Yeah, totally.
I want to mention real quick, as far as incomplete works go, this is one that I learned about researching the episode that Joe and I just put together. That has to do with rapture and utopia and transhumanism. But apparently,
your average stuff to blame.
Average episode. There's an incomplete utopian novel by Sir Francis Bacon. 1626 or so, titled The New Atlantis, that deals with a proto-transhumanist utopian society on the island of Ben Salem, where there's no slavery or poverty, and everybody's ruled over by a group of religiously tolerant scientific elites. So it's
interesting.
It's interesting. That was apparently, that was published, I think, a year after his death. But an very early proto-trans humanist work, but also incomplete.
Yeah.
Picking up on that, I can offer a couple of ideas about incompleteness that we heard back from listeners. Our listener Jim in New Jersey, who often emails us with great email and awesome feedback, he wrote us about the incompleteness episode, and I can't read his whole email. He talked about the TV show Nashville, but he also
big hit, I believe, with the Sminty ladies. They're huge Nashville fans.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But anyway, he offers some psychological feedback on the idea of why we stick with incomplete works of art. You know, why we've got to know the end, even maybe if we're not loving it anymore. I use the example of Lost, how like I got to the point where I don't think I liked the show anymore, but I had to keep going because I wanted to see how it ended, and then I was very disappointed. But anyway, Jim says, quote, "Sticking with something you've invested in falls into the sunk cost fallacy. This is the economic idea that you stick with something wasteful only because you've already invested a lot of resources into it. Think of someone remaining in a bad relationship because they've already invested 5 wasted years into it." I think this is a good example. Once you've already put the time in with something, and our relationships with media are in many ways kind of like our relationships with people, even if, you know, they're not really changing based on our behavior, we sort of feel like it's transactional. You feel like, well, I've put so much into this, I've got to know how it turns out.
Yeah.
So even if, you know, you're at season 5, episode 4, and if that's the first episode you saw, you probably wouldn't continue. Now that you've watched everything that came before, you're stuck with it psychologically. But then he goes on to say, the related term to this is the lost opportunity cost. By sticking with a failed endeavor, you're not available for something better. So the person who's stuck in a bad 5-year relationship because of sunk cost is also missing out on the opportunity to start a relationship with their soulmate. And I think this also applies to media. You know, we've got limited time in our lives to read books and watch movies and experience all the great stories that we want to interact with and have inform our brains. You can't experience it all. So it kind of sucks to realize that you spent a lot of time stuck with a story that you didn't really love because you were motivated by the desire to see how it ends.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024. And we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you on our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun, and I can't wait for you to hear it.
Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And here's one more about the incomplete, unfinished episode and unfinished works of art from our listener, Taylor. Taylor says, dear Steph, to blow your mind, I was just listening to your episode on incomplete and unfinished works, particularly your discussion of TV shows and book series that are unfinished, and I was surprised how little you discussed fandom. I think we did mention it a little, but
yeah, I think a little bit.
We didn't get very deep into it, I guess. Taylor writes, when people come across a series where they have to wait for the next installment or when there will be no more installments, many times they finish it themselves. Huge communities online around fan art, fan fiction, and other fan works thrive, especially for source material that is unfinished.
Oh, yeah.
Fan creators.
Just look at the Firefly Serenity community.
Oh, yeah. Taylor continues, fan creators will also complete, quote, quote, complete the source material by adding elements they feel should have been in the story or would just like to see in the story, even if it's completely unrealistic. They'll get characters together that did not end up together in the canon, revive characters that died in the canon, sometimes completely replace the universe the canon exists in altogether. The episode also reminded me of my own worst experiences with unfinished works. I do a lot of cooperative writing and role playing, and I can attest that a story ended prematurely is all the more painful when you had a hand in creating it. I have even taken to writing shorter stories to avoid that feeling. That's interesting. Hmm. Anyway, Taylor says,
I think we've all been there.
Yeah.
All of us who write fiction.
Yeah. So I'll just finish up. Taylor says, I wanted to thank you and the whole How Stuff Works podcast crew. I haven't written in before, but I've been following this in a few of your other podcasts, like Stuff You Should Know and Stuff They Don't Want You to Know for a while. I always feel as if I'm smarter, have more topics for conversation, and I'm better suited to analyzing things when I'm done listening. Good luck and have a mind-blowing summer. You can tell this came from a while ago. But thank you so much, Taylor. That was a thoughtful and very nice email.
Yeah. So, like, I'm very interested in this topic, as you guys know. Like,
yeah.
I have a background in cultural studies and did a lot of work on fandom. In particular, Henry Jenkins has a whole, basically established a whole discipline on fandom. So it's interesting to hear their perspective on this. Yeah, that might be something fun to tackle in the future.
Yeah. You know, an author that I really enjoy, and I know you've been reading some of his stuff recently, yeah. Michael Shea.
Oh, yeah. I love him.
I love how I think, his earliest, if not his first, novel was, basically an unofficial.
It was basically fan fiction.
Yeah, basically fan fiction. He was a big fan of Jack Vance's, Books in the Dying Earth series.
Yeah.
And he called him up, he wrote him and said, hey, I've written this,
the sequel, a book that would go on to be published as Inyana is the title. And it's a fabulous Jack Vancey adventure that has it, that has a, you know, a distinctive, Michael Shea twist on everything. And he was basically, Jack Vance, said, well, I'm not gonna read it, but you have my blessing. Go, you know, get it published, do whatever.
It's amazing. It would never happen nowadays.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine it happening now, but in this case, you know, it launched, this guy's, career.
And
he went on to write a number of just wonderful books that are very much, you know, distinctively his.
If you haven't heard us sing his praises before on other episodes, or especially on our summer reading episodes, Michael Shea is fantastic. And I'm actually borrowing the incomplete Nift the Lean stories from Robert right now. And it's I read a couple pages every night before bed. It's just so good. It's the best fantasy, like the smartest fantasy I think I've ever read. Like, wow. He could just construct these amazing worlds. Yeah. Okay, so this next one is from Rowan, who is local to us here in Atlanta, and I'm going to try to, it's a longish letter, so I'm going to try to edit it down a little bit. He just lets us know that he's a bio nerd, and that he's written into us before, and he used to work in an HPV lab and is in love with the DIY biohacking community. So when he heard us doing episodes about transhumanism and biohacking, he got excited. So he wrote in to tell us this. Regarding the man who developed EV, and this is in relation to our Tree Man disease episode. EV is the shortened name for Tree Man disease. After cutting his knee as a teenager, that makes sense to me. Wounds are great for introducing germs. HPV, for instance, usually infects mucous membranes like genitalia, mouth, throat, etc. Not places like your knee where there's a thicker barrier, but a wound could circumvent that barrier and let infection get a foothold. I don't have time to dive into the research, but I wonder if there's some correlation between people getting the infection in unusual places and people developing extreme symptoms like Tree Man disease. Who knows? The HPV strains you guys listed off are not super common. It might be part of the reason that it's so rare if it requires a rare strain and a rare genetic mutation, plus sunlight and mysteries, which is, they just don't have real answers yet to what's going on with it. Another thing about HPV infection, usually have more than one strain. It'd be interesting to know if particular combinations showed up more often or if different strains interacted with each other somehow. None of the ones you listed are in the vaccines, but they're working on a more general vaccine that would protect against all HPV strains. It wouldn't help people who already had the disease, but it could prevent any more cases. A bit of hope for your depressing episode. Last fun fact about HPV, you guys said it's super common. It's so common, in fact, that we have a hell of a time finding negative controls for our tests. It's hard to find anyone who hasn't been exposed to HPV. That's comforting. Most of the negative controls end up coming from children samples. And then he gets into biohacking, okay? He says, biohacking, the episodes that we did were pretty neat, he says. Thank you very much. As a kind of not really biohacker myself, I enjoyed them, though I'd like to note that transhumanists are just a tiny section of the biohacking and DIY bio community. Anyway, I happen to be local and thought that you might want to know that at least two makerspaces, hackerspaces in Atlanta are trying to get a biohacking scene going. Maybe we'll be like, we can like get together with these guys and get some magnets put in our fingers. I'm a member at Freeside Atlanta. We're in the process of setting up a lab. We have a class on engineering glow bacteria, which will run again as soon as I get things together. I'm editing that. He mentioned some other ones that are around town that, for people who aren't local, you probably wouldn't be familiar with the suburbs of Atlanta, and says that there's some people working on brain computer interfaces and teams that are building an EEG from scratch. So it sounds like Atlanta's got a burgeoning biohacking community.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. He's plugging for that. So if you are out there, you listen to our biohacking episodes and our transhumanism episodes, and you thought, that sounds like it's something for me, you might want to look into this. He says that the spaces have public events that are listed on meetup.com, and you can check those out. Side note, a friend of mine, unrelated to us doing those episodes, became interested in getting magnets put in his fingers.
Oh, wow.
And went out and found a tattooist, I guess, or a tattoo artist who performs that function as well.
Huh.
So he's doing the magnet thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's one more piece of listener mail. This one is a quick one. And, this one comes, it's another one from Jim. I hate to read one, two by the same author, but this is just a real quick one with a book recommendation in it. Robert, Joe, and Christian, as for synthetic meat and or cannibalism in fiction, I have two suggestions. Pursue at your own peril.
Okay.
The first one he mentions is The Food of the Gods by Arthur C. Clarke, which I read decades ago in The Wind from the Sun, a book of short stories, and I really mean short stories. I think each story was no more than a page or two long.
So like flash fiction,
yeah,
before it was called that.
I've heard of this story, but I haven't read it.
He says, this short story addresses the very questions you brought up in your synthetic meat episode by Clark 50 plus years ago before the technology existed.
Which were basically, would you eat synthetic meat or would you eat synthetic human meat?
Yeah.
Like if it was synthesized human flesh, would you eat it?
What's the problem?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Eat up.
I mean, I'd say.
And I'm a vegetarian.
The problem with eating human meat is that it had to come from a human.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so he's had more? He said there was a second one?
There's a second one. And this one, I imagine we have probably all three read. The Survivor Type by Stephen King.
Yep.
It's an entry in Skeleton Crew.
Yeah.
And also a book of short stories. It's pretty disturbing in a Stephen King kind of way.
I think I read a quote from Stephen King where he was saying, like, I think my favorite types of stories to write are the really nasty, grisly ones. But on this one, I think I went too far.
There's also been, I didn't add this to the listener mail, but several people have written into us both over mail and on Facebook about, because I mentioned Wolverine on that episode and whether he cuts his own skin off and eats it at any point because he can just regrow his own flesh.
Yeah.
And they pointed out that there's an issue of X-Force that I forgot about that I've read where Deadpool, the famous character who just had a movie this summer, does that to himself and feeds bits of himself to another character who's like dying and starving. So he cuts off his own skin and little chunks of arm flesh and feeds it to him.
Gross.
Where does the mask come from? Like, he's really not even beginning to obey basic.
Oh, I think Deadpool, it's nonsense it's science fiction, but he's like Wolverine. He regrows.
Why is he fighting crime or supervillains when he could be feeding the masses?
He's not. Deadpool's a mercenary, man.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. All right. He's got an outfit.
Yeah. Sorry. We just went off in geek territory. We didn't explain what happens in the story. Very brief synopsis. There is a drug smuggler who has a bunch of
heroin specifically.
Has a bunch of heroin with him. He gets stranded on a desert island with nothing to eat. So he's starving to death and he realizes that, well, you know, I could just drug myself so I don't feel pain and then cut my foot off and eat it. And it proceeds from there.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess in that scenario, I would probably OD on the heroin before I would just use it as a painkiller to cut off my own limbs.
See, the thing is, he found the pamphlet from the airplane that says, auto cannibalism, is it for you? And it's all about surviving a plane crash through auto cannibalism.
That would be amazing if stewardesses have had to explain auto cannibalism to you before a plane took off.
It's definitely a disturbing one, and one I remember well from when I read it the first time, like in junior high.
Yeah,
so.
I read it when I was a kid too. Okay, so on that note, we should probably wrap things up.
On the auto cannibalism note, that is only just a slice of the vast listener mail flesh chunk that we have consumed for you today.
Yeah, we only were able to cut a little bit off and chew on it for 45 minutes. Sorry. But we will get to more in the next couple of months.
Yeah, and like I said before, if we didn't get to your email, please don't take that as a slight against the wonderful feedback that you send us. There's just too much good stuff for us to get to.
A whole podcast. It's just reading letter mail.
Yeah, so please keep sending it. We love to read what y'all out there have to say.
So maybe you're listening and you're thinking to yourself, hey, I didn't know that I could get my messages read on a podcast that I like listening to all the time. How do I do that? Well, there's a number of ways that you can do that. You can always reach out to us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram, although I would not recommend that you write us a letter on Instagram. That seems like a bad format for it. But You can see lots of cool pictures on there from us. All of those, we are Blow the Mind. Write us there. You can write us messages. You can follow us and see all the things that we post, not just our own content, but the weird, bizarre science oddities that we find throughout the week. Where else can they find us, boys?
Well, you can head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's the mothership. That's where you'll find all of our videos, our podcast episodes, links out to those social media accounts, and more.
And, of course, you can always email us directly at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.